For the latest news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring the Boston Bash Brigade, visit our website at www.b3crew.com.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBash Brigade. Follow us on Twitter under our respective pen names.
And don't forget to check out the rest of the Land of Esh programming, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues program.
When the sisters are away, the bastards will play. It's time for the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Episode 180. The transfer is strawberries.
Bastards and wenches, please rise for the Boston National Anthem.
For Boston, for Boston.
Bastards and wenches, you may be seated, and welcome to another episode of the Boston Bash Brigade. I am King Baby Duck.
Luonic.
It's been a really, really bad week for our older celebrities. We've had not one, not two, not three, but we had four people die like in the last week and a half. We had Roger Ebert.
Okay.
We had former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher.
Ah, well.
We had
the Brits for you.
Yeah. We had Annette Funicello, one of the original Mouseketeers in the Mickey Mouse Club.
But that starts like the whole thing where Disney would use kids and manipulate them. And that's just not good. I dislike that.
You don't like, you never liked the Mickey Mouse Club?
Nope.
Not even like the version in the 80s? You never?
No.
Are you absolutely sure you never really got into?
I'm positive. I was always sticking on Nickelodeon.
Not even for, like, what about Kids Incorporated?
I didn't have Disney.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It used to be a premium channel back in the day.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. And then the final one of the great comedians out there, Jonathan Winters, passing away.
Remind me who he was again.
Okay, so you might know him better as the son of Robin Williams on the sitcom Mork and Mindy.
No, I don't.
Okay, he was the brand new Papa Smurf in the Smurf movies.
Wait, so that guy's actually dead? They won't be able to have him back?
Nope. Although he already did record all his parts, so that's the sad thing. His final role will be of Papa Smurf in the Smurfs.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Oops, Roll Winters.
Mm-hmm. And he used to be like a regular on the Dean Martin Show and Johnny Carson and a bunch of other the big late night talk shows in the 70s and 80s. He is currently looking through his Wikipedia to see if there's something that he recognizes him in.
Is this guy?
Yes, that guy.
Oh, okay. All right. I've seen him in a ton of stuff. I just can't remember exactly what.
Okay.
That's sad.
Yeah, it is.
I find sadness in that. And I can't even remember his name more than the other two, so.
Right.
That's my life.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
And in other screwed up news, and this is something that you really wanted to discuss about, the jinxing of sports players, specifically here in the Boston area, correct?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm saying in sports in general. I mean, it's getting, I say it's epidemic. It's really that. It's gotten to that point where I'm kind of sick and tired of seeing it. All right, so let's put it this way. I was watching the Bruins game. Let's see, that was against the Devils, and that was, I want to say Tuesday or Wednesday night. I believe it was Wednesday. So, let's put it this way. I'm sitting there, I'm watching the game, and of course the Devils are getting their ass handed to them. They're like basically 5-0, and, or 4-0, something along those lines. So, let's just put it this way. There's a part where they're going to drop the puck in the center ice or something like that, and they have a video on Brad Marchand. And, like, they're just, like, they're filming him right there and then. Like, the puck is just about to drop, and the announcer goes, "There's a very healthy Brad Marsh on." And I shit you not, 10 to 15 seconds later, he's down on the ice because Anton Volenkov, whatever the fuck his name is, went over and gave him hit him into the boards. But not only that, he came in with, like, a Muay Thai friggin', like, elbow into the back of his head. And this this gave a minor concussion, as they stated in the news, minor, and I mean minor concussion, to Brad Marchand, which usually means it was a concussion.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but when they
a
said...
A concussion is a concussion.
When I was in the hospital and they said, "Oh yeah, you have acute appendicitis," I said, "Oh yeah, is that, you know, are you going to be able to fix that, you know, with the pill or something like that?" "No, we got to do surgery still." Son of a bitch. So more or less, their concept in the medical field is if there was a slight concussion, it was still a concussion. So, as probably a moderate, you know, as concussion could be, but I still feel that any time you have the word concussion, it's still bad.
And how many concussions has Marchand had?
I don't think he has had as many as, like, Bergeron. Bergeron is the one that has, like, 4. I think he's up to 4. I believe that's...
How is he still playing? I thought they cut them off after 3.
No, they give him medical clearance and he comes back. But I'm telling you, hopefully this, you know, he doesn't go and pull what a lot of other, you know, sports athletes have pulled. I mean, we've had a couple of our, you know, the football players on the Patriots who either killed themselves or done something because of the fact of the concussions. And right now there's a whole thing about the NFL, there's a lawsuit, I guess, against the NFL saying that the NFL's been covering up all these concussions or something like that, that are, you know, medically sound, that these guys have had concussions and they haven't really enforced any other medical procedures to help them with the concussions. So later on, when they go friggin' loopy, they just go, "Oh, well, drugs or something like that." So that's what they do.
No, it's never.
It's not always just drugs, but sometimes it is. It's because what it is a lot of people that obtain these concussions don't know how to fix anything, or if they had migraines or they have anything. Most of the over-the-counter meds or something like that can't take care of it. So they have to go to stronger things such as, you know, marijuana. And then sometimes marijuana... I'm not saying that it always happens. I'm saying that sometimes marijuana leads into stronger drugs, or they need something strong in order to fix that problem that's in their head.
Right.
Or
at least, like, Oxycontin.
Well, yeah, people get caught on that. But I'm just saying in this sense, but to get back to the main point of view here is if you are watching the game and stuff like that... I mean, you even said it before, and, you know, there was that whole stint that Tom Brady went on, like, what, 14, 15 games without a freaking, you know...
Yep.
Without an interception, and just as he says that, he didn't even finish it. He, like, I remember that game.
Yeah. Here,
that's the sad thing is that as soon as he said that, all of a sudden Tom Brady throws an interception. It's like he was like, "Oh, well, that's my cue, I gotta throw an interception." It's mind-boggling because you're sitting there... And you're just like, "Dude, somebody, knock on wood! Oh my god, knock on wood!
None of people are knocking on the wood!"
Yeah, I mean, and then something bad happens where, you know...
It's like, remember in that movie Celtic Pride where, like, they try not to jinx the whole win?
Everybody, switch the seat with the person next to you! And then they switch seats. "Nope, that's not working! Everybody, get out of your seats and move over to the side! Shit! Alright, nothing's working! Get back into your seats! Where you were sitting before!" And they all start crowding in and nothing, you know, everything bad just happens.
It's exactly!
It's just, no matter what, it's... I feel like lately it's like the announcer's fault, but, I mean, I remember, what was it, like Rollerball? Mm-hmm. Remember, like, the movie Rollerball? They're like...
Wait, which one? The original 1970s version or the one with Paul Heyman in it?
Actually, both. Because they basically did the same thing. But it was the whole setup where they go, "Oh, why is this camera following this guy around? He's alone on the other side of the track." And then all of a sudden, bang, he's hurt. You know, it's like somebody... I feel like somebody's, like, setting this shit up.
Mm-hmm.
It just gets to that point where you're like, wow, what? It's funny. The announcer mentions something about that. And then they get injured. It's like...
Yeah.
I mean, that was, like, the whole thing with, like, Rondo on the Celtics. You know, almost all the players that have gotten injured on the Celtics are like, "Well, so-and-so's stepping up. Oh, nope, he's injured now, too."
It's like, "Oh, he looks healthy. Let's do the slippery floor!"
Yeah. Oil slick, please.
I feel like when it comes to topics like healthy players, records, not having interceptions and everything... It's safe to talk about it when the game's not happening.
Yeah, it's a lot better when you're not doing, like, when you're doing the announcing, just announce what the hell's going on in the game, please.
Yes.
It's not, don't go, oh, well, his numbers are up to such and such, blah, 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 and then he has the worst night of his life, and it sticks with him.
Exactly.
It gets to that point where, like, oh, he's going to go break Wayne Gretzky's record. Nope, he just fell and crashed into the wall, and he broke his leg.
He will never play hockey again.
Yep, that's sticking out of his leg. Yep, he's never going to play again. It's just, it's like, what the hell? You just jinxed the living crap out of him.
Yes. Just talk about what's happening on the field or in the ring or on the court.
Okay, so-and-so is coming up the side of, you know, of the basketball court, the rink, the baseball field, whatever. You know, it's just, it's one of those things that pisses me off. Because you're sitting there and they're like, one of the pitchers was up, you know, for the Red Sox, and they're just like, oh yeah, Lester's just doing fantastic tonight. Ball, foul, home run, crap! You know, you're like, what the hell? You just ruined it. So, yeah, I can't, you know, it just goes against my, you know, moral obligation that you, when you're doing announcing, mm-hmm. just don't go, like, if it's going to be, like, one of those perfect games, he might be in a perfect game! Nope, he is just
one strike away from a no-hitter, and oh, it's a home run! Oh, he must feel so disappointed.
This is when you gotta, like, duct tape that guy into a telephone pole upside down and hit him with baseballs.
You mean like what they used to do with Pedro Martinez?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what you need to do. Seeing that he's back. But yeah, for the most part, I just feel that all the announcers need to give us a break and not go to the point where they're like, oh, so-and-so, you know, came in tonight and he's healthy as a horse and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden they're like, great, now he broke his leg and now we got to go dig a 6-foot trench and shoot him because he's not as healthy as a horse now. He's just as a broke leg horse. He's Seabiscuit's like great-great-grandnephew.
Yep.
So, it's along those lines where it's kind of, I can't stand this crap anymore. I'm trying to, like, right now I've been playing ESPN Streak for the Cash, and it is a fun little game, but I'm probably not going to win the $150,000 that's up for stakes right on it. But what you got to do is you got to, you know, keep the whole setup of the game, you know, the whole setup of the game is they give you two options. You pick one option, and you have to stick with that game for that whole entire period. Once that game's over, then you can pick the next one. That's how it goes. So if you go and pick a game at like 2:00, that's going to go to maybe 5:00 for whatever, like baseball or something like that. And then you can pick another game around 7:00 or something like that. You know, if you want to for hockey, baseball, whatever the other sport is that you wanted to. I can't do soccer. I can't trust soccer. I can't trust it to save.
Oh, spoiler alert! It's just going to end in a tie.
Oh yeah, that's exactly that's the thing. They actually have an option. They have two options for the game really for soccer. It's like it's either. It's like Manchester United win or Spain, and then like all of a sudden it will drop down to the next one or tied. It's like really a tie,
dude? Just tie. You're gonna get that streak no problem after that.
Yeah, no kidding. I bet that's what the guy because there's one guy that's already up there. He's like 24. He's already got one more pick and then he's got to go up to 27. So I doubt that because he's been so careful, he's probably gonna be able to get that money.
But, he's probably like a Will Hunting type of person. He's like. All right, according to these numbers here, and according to these numbers there.
And this guy had his Wheaties this morning. He did. He had his Wheaties. I watched him do it.
You know, meanwhile, this guy smoked his Wheaties, which is why this team is going to fail today.
Well, that's actually the funny thing is I was able to do a little bit of that. I'm not saying I'm Goodwill Hunting at all, but I'm just saying that more or less when I was watching, there was one that was like the Dodgers versus the... what was it? The Giants. So the Giants, they came off a big year. So I'm like, oh, that's good. The Giants, and then like a lot of percentages for the Giants, they want the Giants to win. The Dodgers are in, and guess who's pitching for them? None other than our old pitcher, Beckett.
Really?
Yes. And more or less, I went on that whole concept that, no, Beckett's going to suck, so I picked the Giants. And I won. So more or less, it's just one of those things where you got to look out, like, what's going on, who's doing what. You
it's like, okay, so he did shit here for our team. He's probably going to do shit for that team.
So, Yeah, for the most part, it's one of those things where you gotta feel what's going on at that time, and you'd be like, oh, did they win the other night? How much did they kick ass? And how badly are they going to be hurting because they traveled or they this and that?
Right.
There's tons of things that can happen.
Because there's that too. Say that they had a great game. Say they won like 17-0. Oh, that's fantastic.
Well,
but now they are going to be a little bit fatigued because of all the home runs and runs that they had. They could probably lose because of it. Because they put so much energy into that one game.
Well, let's put it this way. If I was, you know, like, because of the fact that I put on the Devils. I put on the Bruins when they were against the Devils. So the Bruins were able to win that, even though I felt like I was going to have a massive coronary because the announcer was doing it again. Uh-huh. He was saying, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. It looks like the Bruins got this in the bag. 2 goals in under a minute. F you, buddy. You really, you know, it got to that point where I was like, you jinxed me. You're jinxing me again. You're going to kill me. Like, and then it ended up like at a 5-4, and I was like, oh my god. Like, by the time I thought I was having a coronary because of the announcer. But I'm saying, like, because they did so much on that game, even though that the Devils are, like, low end, like, they're basically, in my opinion, they're already out. They're gone.
Yeah.
But like, they go from Bruins playing the Devils to the next night they go against the Islanders, and the Islanders win 2-1. Like, that was one of those things where I was like, oh, it's so difficult. I mean, it wasn't even up on my streak for cash, but if I was to go and say, because they had that kind of a night the night before, they're not going to come back in, you know, too well, because especially Marchand's not into play, and then this and that, and because
Marchand travels well.
Marchand finally came back. Marchand had, like, a dry spell for a little bit. He hasn't been able to score any goals, really. But then, like, you know, when we get Jágr comes in, and Jágr has been helping. I'm so glad that Jágr's on our team now and whatnot, but Jágr has helped put, you know, clean up the trash in front of the net over at, you know, on the other side of the goal and put it in the net. And like, that's what we've been needing, is mm-hmm. somebody like him with a veteran status experience to go in there and play the damn game like it's supposed to be played, instead of playing all this, you know, stupid grab-ass hockey, as I call it. I hate grab-ass hockey because the Bruins have been, even with Jágr, they have been doing this, and, I mean, I think I was watching it last weekend, and last weekend they were, it was coming down to the final wire, they were down just one. And they had a power play, and all they did was they kept passing the puck around to one another. It was horrible. It was just horrible because of the fact that, you know, they just...
But that's what usually happens in a power play. Oh, you think it's going to be total advantage. No, 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 no.
No, that was the other thing was, is with the Devils game, we were down. We had a 3-on-5, and we were the 3. The Bruins were the 3-on-5, and they got like 3 shorthanded goals that night. I'm like,
yep.
What the hell? Same with the Devils. The Devils got shorthanded goals when we were on the power play. So it doesn't make any sense. So
it's like it's like if you get a power play, it's more of a disadvantage if you have more players on there.
Yeah, you'd be better off just pulling your goalie and just trying to do a six on one. But yeah, the setup that I have to say with the announcers and whatnot, I feel they need to stop just like contradicting everything that's going to be going on with the game. Like, they'll just be like, oh, this guy's going to be doing really, really well tonight, and they just play god awful. It's like, It's just one of those things.
It brings me to mind when we were watching the last Super Bowl with the Patriots in it, and all four of them said the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl and kick ass.
Was
there
like Asante Samuel or something?
Yeah.
That dropped that ball. I'm telling you, because of that factor, that was a year that, you know, the Spygate, whatever the hell you want to call it, that whole aspect that was going on, I think somebody told them they had to lose that game no matter what. So that's why they had to drop that ball. And if we caught that ball that was going off into the thing, it would have been all over with. We would have won it.
Yes.
There was no doubt in my mind. But seeing that the other team was able to hold on, you know, get the ball, hold on to, like, you know, a good couple of timeouts, they were able to do it and beat us. And it felt so wrong. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those things that I was questionable about that one. But the announcers, yeah, they like to screw everything up.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I think that when it comes to records and talking about players' health and everything, talk about it after the game is over. Don't talk about it during it.
Yeah.
If you talk about it during, something bad's going to happen. But if you talk it after, oh, there's no repercussions whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, just do us a favor. I mean, like, that's the thing with the guys, even when, like, it's on the period break, like, when hockey is going on, they're on their, you know, in between the first and the second and the third period, just shut up. Just, you know what, I won't care. I'll watch more commercials just because of it. I don't want to hear the announcers anymore talk. So that's usually, I'm hoping that there's always the Red Sox game, so at least I could switch over there and listen to Jerry. Jerry's always good.
Yeah.
Which, other thing, just to bring it up, we're glad that he's doing good, too, because they recently found that he had cancer yet again, but they were able to fight it off from January on to, like, February or something like that, and he's back to health again. So he just had a little bit of a fall, a relapse, but he's okay.
And that's great to hear.
Yeah. He's also a very strong man for able to talk with it about it. Like, he did, like, two or three interviews I saw that in different places too.
Yeah.
About the whole thing. So I have to say that man has big, big breast balls.
Yes.
To be able to do that, especially dealing with the depression aspect. Mm-hmm. I would know. That's a shitty situation.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, I think I'm done with sports right now.
We haven't done sports in a really long time.
Yeah, I feel bad. I mean, I know a lot of our, you know, listeners want to be able to hear more about sports. I mean, I think what I'll do is, because I've been doing a lot more with the Streak for Cash, and I'm trying to pay attention more to sports, I'll try to see if I can write something up
about sports. Actually, that wouldn't be a bad idea. Like, because, you know, when it comes to, like, when it comes to doing the podcast show, because we record on Saturday, and it goes up on Tuesday, and by the time it goes up on Tuesday, it's all news. Probably everybody knows what happened, and probably people don't really care much, but when it comes to, like, a topic that you just did, yeah, everybody needs to know more about it. But when it comes to talking about the, like an actual upcoming game, you know, it's one and done.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if you do some, like a weekly written article about maybe making, like, Blues picks or something along those lines.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do about that. I mean, it's sometimes hard to keep up with sports because there's so much stuff. I mean, the only problem about it is I'm not in the preferable shit, as I would like to say, the trenches, because if I'm in the trenches, then I would know it right there and then. More or less, mine's is secondhand information from ESPN and Nessun.
Phone updates.
Yeah, any phone updates that pop up and say, hey, this is what happened in sports. But yeah, no, more or less, I mean, I have some kind of in-depth. I'm not saying that I'm the best professional sport person, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, I could go to ESPN and do their job because I got a teleprompter.
Yeah.
But anyway, for the most part, I'm just saying that at least, you know, I could provide as much proper information as I could, you know, in the whole setup of explaining what I feel about what happened in certain sports, like injuries and whatnot. So
yeah.
But, all right. Next, Trents.
Okay, Trents, the brand new film.
No, we're not saying Transylvania. Trents.
Trents.
Like, Trents is the motion from Static X. And tripping balls on acid trancing. You know, trance. You know, music, trance. No, just kidding.
No. Hypnotizing people. Yeah. Putting them into a deep sleep to reveal hidden things.
You're feeling very sleepy. You're listening to my voice.
So, Trance, it's the new film from Danny Boyle, one of our favorite directors, the guy behind such films as Trainspotting, 28 Days Later, Millions, Slumdog Millionaire, and the recently critically acclaimed play production of Frankenstein.
Yeah. Interesting.
Which I hope, because I remember when they were, like doing, like, commercials for it at the movie theater that they were going to do, like, a live screening of.
Oh, yeah.
I really hope that comes to DVD, because that looked interesting, how Dr. Frankenstein and the creature, each night, they switch their roles.
Oh, no shit. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, Trent, starring James McAvoy, McAvoy, who we know
from
as
from Wanted.
And Professor Xavier from X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
The always talented but very beautiful Rosario Dawson.
Oh, yeah, gorgeous.
Yeah, and Vincent Castle. So the film talks about an art heist of sorts. There's this big painting. It wasn't Rembrandt. Rembrandt was one of the first pictures.
I could just do it the really simple way. Let's just put it this way. An art auctioneer who has become mixed up with a group of criminals partners up with a hypnotherapist, or the rapist, in order to recover a lost painting. So, as the king was going to say, More or less, this guy, he works as an auctioneer, and there is a painting that is up for grabs. I can't remember exactly what the painting is. It's something about the floating witches or something along those
witches.
Lines.
Witches. It had to do with the witches.
Something along those lines. So more or less, there's a certain path that, of course, I like how they started off the movie. They just went into it. It just pops up. There's McAvoy just sitting there in like a little audience seating area, and there's a guy auctioning off stuff, and there's nobody in the crowd,
yeah.
It's kind of funny. But they go about, saying, oh yeah, beforehand, we didn't have like any precautionary setups. We just, muscle guys could just come in and take the art whenever they wanted to.
Right, now be the hero.
Yeah, now they have special, everything. They check everybody that comes in, make sure they don't have anything, blah, blah, blah. Stuff like go along those lines. Lo and behold, that actually happens where the art heist comes into play and whatnot, and he goes to do the special Dropbox setup. But lo and behold, this other person, who is Frank, which is funny how they spelled his name. It's F-R-A-N-C-K.
I've never seen anyone spell it that way.
He's French. What do you expect? Vincent Castle, who's been in tons of movies, and I mean... He was actually... It's funny because he's playing, another art... criminal that he was in the... I want to say Ocean's...
Ocean's 12 and Ocean's 13.
13, yeah, exactly.
François Toulon.
Yeah. You would be able to say that, you French bastard.
I would be able to say it.
Yeah, so more or less, the setup that was going on with that character was he was in the heist and whatnot, and he went to go, he got the bag, but yet James McAvoy's character goes and shocks him for... Mm-hmm. To make it look like he was trying to put up a thing and
put up a fight,
and he gets hit in the head with the butt of a shotgun, and yeah, it goes on to that point where because of that fact that he got hit in the head, that caused a bleed in his head, and they had to relieve it and whatnot, and messed with his memory. But lo and behold, it wasn't exactly the memories that they were looking for when they went to Rosario Dawson
playing Elizabeth,
yeah, aka Elizabeth. So. Yeah, it's a very in-depth story. I mean, I thought at the, because of the fact, when you showed me this trailer, I was like, oh crap, please don't be what was that?
Like a Black Swan?
No. It's funny actually you say that, Vincent Castle's in Black Swan.
Yes, yeah.
but I'm saying it's, oh god. The movie that we saw that was based off that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Total Recall.
Total Recall.
Thank you. God, my memory sucks. So, Total Recall.
Do I have to put you in a trance again?
Oh, no. I'm actually thinking that would be probably a way to get it booted up again, because after college, my brain just... it's gone down in flames. But no, the concept is like how Total Recall was. Like, it was one of those things where, oh yeah, don't go to that place. And then he goes to the place, and all of a sudden it... cracks open something, and he might be a special agent, but it might all be just a dream. It might be this, it might be that.
Right.
And that was the one thing that I was worried about the most about. But this went a different path.
I initially thought that this was going to be a film that, the majority of it was going to take place inside of this trance. But it turned out to be more with that, especially when Rosario Dawson's character Elizabeth becomes involved with the other bank heisters.
Oh, yeah. And that's the funny thing about it was how she was able to get into it. I felt that was awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was able to do a little bit of detective work and figure it out. I mean, she was able to pay attention to seeing that there was maybe a wire in his shirt, and then also his fingernails had been pulled.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened. After he got out of the hospital and stuff like that, he comes home. All of his stuff is strewn about and everything like that, and he had to go meet the guys that went and did the heist. Lo and behold, they had to pull his nails out and stuff like that to the point because they thought he was lying. He didn't know where the thing was because he duped him.
Yeah.
So it leads up to the whole fact that seeing that the guy had to legitimately go to the doctor to see it, to prove the whole situation and whatnot because of the painting is basically lost right now. They don't know where it is. It's just one of those things that it was very impressive how they did a lot of the stuff, like how to drop them into a trance,
Mm-hmm. Like, it started out with looking for the keys and that acting as sort of like a test of sorts. And then it went into trying to find the painting. And it was very interesting to see how Elizabeth just jumped on board with helping out so long as she got a piece of it.
Yeah.
Because normally, if that was the case, they would probably have killed her anyway.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. That's the one thing that goes on about, like, being a criminal. There is no such thing as, like, you know, honor among thieves. There's just really nothing.
No.
There's nothing about that.
Because that's one of the things that made him so paranoid about wanting to reveal the location of the painting was because he thought that once he revealed where it was, they were just going to kill him anyways.
Yeah.
Which is why he was repressing it even harder than before.
Yeah. Which might not have been the case, because it seemed like Frank didn't really want to do that.
No.
It seemed like he just wanted to get the money, so what it is, they just split it up. And that was the thing. This painting went for what? Almost like $25
million? $27 million? Can you imagine having that sort of cash just lying around? I don't
know! These freaking people! Like, they go in and they sit there at these freaking auctions. I mean, me watching, like, the stuff on Fast and Loud with the Gas Monkey Garage or what, like, one of the auction shows and stuff like that. I mean, I'm sitting there, and these guys wheel up these nice cars that they either rebuilt or they kept in really nice condition over the years, only one owner, blah, 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 and the friggin' car goes for, like, $100,000, and that person just drops it like it's nothing. Like, they're like, oh, okay, $70,000, $80,000, $85,000, $70,000, you know, blah, blah. They just keep going back and forth, and you're like, what do you do for work that you have that fucking money? How do you do that?
How can I be a part of it?
Yeah, exactly. It gets to that point where I'm just like, what do I have to do in order to get me into that business? Like, it just boggles my mind. I mean, especially...
$27 million. Oh, let me just get it right under my rug right here. Yeah, here you go.
That's in my back pocket.
I was just using it as a napkin.
I wipe my ass daily with that money. Here you go. It's one of those things that it just gets under my skin. I mean, the guy from Gas Monkey Garage... He kills me. Richard, I can't remember his name right now. But anyways, he goes up to, like, find, like, one of those old beat-up cars and stuff like that, and the person goes, oh, yeah, I want, like, $7,000 for it. Nah, I'm gonna cut you in half. I'm gonna just get you right at the knees. I'm gonna go, like, $3,500. I want $3,500 for this thing. Well, then he talks him down. He gets him down to, like, maybe about $4,000. He just goes like this. Hold on 1 second. I already had that counted out for you. Here you go. Here's $4,000. How the hell are you carrying that around your pocket? Why don't you have security guards? Could I work for you? Please give me a job so I can actually protect you while you have that money. What the... I'm like...
And so at the very least, if you stiff me, I can just punch you and then just steal the money.
This is the thing that kills me, is this guy doesn't have any, like, personal security and stuff like that. He's down in Texas, and I don't see a gun on him. I'm sorry.
I think that's the point. He conceals his weapons on him.
I doubt that he could.
Hold on. Just pull this on my ass. Giant shotgun here. Do you want to cheat me right now?
But watching the movie and stuff like that and seeing these people like, oh, like the first bid was like $5 million. The guy's like $5 million and then like $10 million. Oh, $15 million.
Oh, I guess we'll put $15.5 million.
Yeah, exactly. $15.5 million. Anybody $15.5 million? You know, it's like.
Does anyone have an extra $0.5 million with him?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they do these record setting things just to set a Guinness Book of World Records kind of thing.
Yeah,
it
gives these millions a hard on. I'm telling you, it gives them a massive hard on when they do stuff like this.
Yeah, the top like what 4% or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But going back into Trance, what I like about this film is it starts off. You think that Simon is just a victim of sorts, you know, not that big of a victim.
He has a gambling issue, all this other stuff, and yeah.
And then you go into a bit of the second act where you get to see more of what these characters are like, who they, what they are, what they could be. And then you realize that a lot of these people are not what they seem. And Janie Boyle does a fantastic job when it comes to that. Look at 28 Days Later when those guys are finally rescued by these soldiers. You think, oh, everything's going to be okay now. They're going to be protected.
Oh, turn on them.
Yeah. They want to mate with the women so they can repopulate England.
Yeah, exactly. Even though that's a dumb idea.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, for the most part, when they did that one, did he have anything to do with 28 Weeks Later?
James McAvoy?
No.
Oh, Danny Boyle? Yeah, he was second unit director of that.
All right, just making sure, because that's one of those things where I hate seeing one of the guys that has directed that first movie. He did an awesome job on it, and then the second movie comes out and he had nothing to do with it.
No, he was a second unit director. He just couldn't be the main director because at the time he was busy doing something else. I think that was when he was preparing for either Slumdog Millionaire or Millions. Or, no, Sunshine, that's what it was.
Yeah.
But I liked how this film paced itself. Granted, the second act is a little bit slow, but like I said, this was like the time when you got to know how these characters acted and thought. Especially when it came to the strawberries. Seeing what was going through that one character's head when with the mere utter of it. Like, what? I'm just wondering, like, what is it about strawberries that just, you know, made him feel like he was being buried alive?
No, see, that's the thing is, all right. If you notice, there was the four guys sitting in the couch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what it was is Rosario Dawson's character already had kind of put the trance over them. So what she did was she told them what was going to happen. And there is a certain word that only if they hear it from his voice would be the only one that would happen. So she had already, you know, put that... She had already planted the seed before that.
Mm-hmm.
So more or less, when McAvoy's character Simon walked up to him and said, strawberry, that was just a key word. That was just a key... Dude, you could have made it like Velociraptor. Or you could have made it like Little Pink Bunny or something like that. Uh-huh. It's just one of those things where it's a trigger word. So what it did was, you know, like three of those guys started like laughing about it because it didn't do anything to him. But the one guy, he just started flipping out and stuff like that because that's what happened was is the fear came into him. So yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's just one of those things where it could trigger. But that's the thing; it's very hard for having people to get hypnotized. Apparently, from what my understanding, if people have a really strong mind, they're not going to get hypnotized. If they have a weak mind, bam, they're done. You could make them pounce across the stage naked if you wanted to.
Like the Frank Santos does sometimes, the RV the hypnotist.
Yes, exactly. But that's the thing. He's got to find the right person because he has a little trick to be like, oh, let's see who would do it. You know, let's see who, you know.
Let's see who's the most gullible person in the audience right now.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that happens. So, but, I mean, that's not really what this movie's all about. It's about trying to, like...
trying to unlock hidden memories that are repressed in someone, and how some of these memories should be repressed.
Yeah, how they shouldn't actually come out into play, so... I don't think I want to go any further about that, because it would actually ruin the movie.
It wouldn't.
I feel like this is one of those movies that's a hidden gem, that people actually have to go and see this.
Yes. It's one of those films that you can talk about right afterwards. You can have massive discussions about, see, what it all means, why this all happened, and why probably it shouldn't have happened in the first place.
The only thing I have to say is like, this movie, I didn't see any, like, any other trailers for this besides until you sent one to me. Like, that's the thing. Like, I haven't really seen any commercialization of this, so I don't think this movie's going to do as well as I want it to. Because that's one of those things where it's kind of like Snatch. I didn't know Snatch until I finally watched it. Like, it popped up on the movie channel, and I went, "This is a great freaking movie. This should be played at like a movie theater 24/7." Like, that's how good this movie is. It's one of those things. But I mean, that's the whole thing. There's always like that hidden gem. I mean, I know this isn't going to be everybody's like
cup of tea.
Yeah, cup of tea for the English. Brits.
Yep.
But
if you sit through the second act, I promise you will see a very, very hot Rosario Dawson sans clothing.
I wanted to keep that quiet, sir.
So why?
Because it's a nice little surprise, but now you ruined it.
Sorry.
You ruined it for everybody, so now they're just gonna go and see.
Did I ruin it, or did I make people go, she's naked in this film? I must go see it now! Ah! And they come back afterwards, well, that movie was fucked up but brilliant.
Yeah. I would have to say it's a wee bit confusing at the first part, because there was a point where he actually was in the trance. Mm. There was one point that I said, this doesn't seem real. But yeah, they did a great job with this. I don't know how else they could have done this movie.
There's me neither.
No way. He's a brilliant son of a bitch, I have to say.
Yeah. So how do we rate this? Like, I can't
out of five.
Out of five, I can't really give it a five because of there were the slow parts of it. But I have to say, 4.6 out of five for me. That I will say, it's another great film from Danny Boyle. He never really can disappoint, with the exception of The Beach. But that was probably more the scriptwriter's fault than his fault.
Yeah.
Great acting, great development of characters, and some wonderful twists that I was not expecting at all.
Yeah, exactly.
In this movie.
I'll one up you. I'll give it a 4.8.
Okay.
I'll give it a 4.8 and a billion for Rosario Dawson. But that's neither here nor there, and if I somehow my girlfriend finds out, I will die. So please don't tell her. Yeah, for the most part, it was absolutely amazing in every retrospect that I feel that, you know, to reactivate your mind. Because more or less on the ride home, you were like, are you okay? I just had to mull shit over. Like, I was just trying to figure out some of the stuff that was going on in the movie that, like, you know, certain parts, like, what was real, what was not real, you know. It's that kind of a deep thought type movie, and I liked how they designed it. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Great.
So, speaking of hidden gems, there's another film that just recently opened up here in America, and it's from one of the most popular animated studios in Japan, Studio Ghibli, and it's called From Up on Poppy Hill. Now, a lot of people know that Disney usually releases these Studio Ghibli films in America because they have a great connection with its founder, Hayao Miyazaki, and sorts. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, they've decided not to be behind theatrical distribution for this one. And I feel like the reason why that is because, unlike the previous films in the Studio Ghibli library, this one isn't like some sort of fantasy piece, or like, I don't want to say it's not imaginative, but it's not like one of those sorts of films where there's like magical characters and creatures and talking cats and weird other monsters throughout.
So no Mary Poppins, no Over the Frickin' Rainbow. Yeah, okay, so keep going.
And this film, it was co-written by Hayao Miyazaki, but it was directed by his son, Goro, who's...
Goro? He's got four arms? Does he have four arms? Please tell me he has four arms.
No, he doesn't have four
arms. Oh, God damn it.
But his last foray into anime was his first directorial debut, Tales of Earthsea, which, to put it bluntly, was the worst film in the Studio Ghibli library. So he really fucked the pooch with that one.
Oh,
but for this one, from Up on Poppy Hill, instead of the whole fantasy realm, he chose more of a realistic slice-of-life period piece. Because this is a film that takes place during when the Olympics are about to happen in Tokyo in 1964. The Korean War just finished up. And Japan is, like, embracing the new and trying to wipe away the old.
Okay. Oh, God, is this fascism?
No.
Are you sure?
I am positive.
Communism?
Nope.
Libertarians?
Would it be libertarian? That's a
Tea Party, because I just saw that because of the fact that I was just looking at my Facebook, and it apparently Tea Party groups plan anti-tax rally or something like that.
Oh.
Good luck with throwing the tea in the Boston Harbor. Yes. Anyways, but I'm just saying that. So more or less, they want to take care of the old and just get it out. Like are we saying kill off the old people?
No. We're talking more like building wise, make Japan look new.
Like demolish all the
old
shitty
buildings.
Shitty little wood shacks or something like that.
Yeah,
the stuff that basically whenever When back in World War II, when we bombed basically over in their place, everything would catch fire because it was all wood?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, I got that.
So basically, they want to just make everything look new just to impress the Olympic Committee when they come and, you know, host the Olympics that year.
Okay.
So it focuses on the character, two characters. The first one is Umi. She's a high school girl who raises a pair of signal flags that you see ships will fly around in hopes that her father will one day see them. Now, her father passed away because the ship that he was on exploded during the Korean War. The Koreans, like, blew it up. There were no survivors whatsoever. But she still puts those flags up in hopes that he can see them, you know, in the afterlife and stuff. And during this time, she's running a boarding house while her mother is studying abroad in America, and she makes sure her fellow housemates are well-nourished and everything. But one day, she comes across a poem in the paper regarding her flags. And she finds out it was written by one of her classmates, Shun, who he and his friends are currently fighting the school administration from demolishing their beloved quarters. Which is where this is coming in, with the whole trying to get rid of the old and preparing for the new.
Ah, okay.
Because this is where, like, all the clubs are hosted. This is where, like, the philosophy club is. This is where the theater club is. This is
chess club. Yeah, chess club.
Chess club, newspaper, everything is there.
Oh, I gotta go download chess app. Sorry. Just got inspired. Thanks, asshole.
Sorry. But they're trying to fight the school from demolishing their beloved but very old building. Like, to give an idea of how bad this building is, they joked about saying, oh, not even the students from the last generation cleaned up after themselves. So when you go inside, like, there's shit everywhere. Like, think the best way possible. Imagine your TV room as it is now.
My bomb shelter?
Your bomb shelter, as it is right now, at this very moment.
Well, seeing that Dark Hearts occupied it, yeah, it looks like crap.
30 times over.
Are we talking about hoarders?
Yes!
Hoarders? Okay.
You are talking about hoarders because...
Actually, one of the houses that goes up to my neighborhood, I think they were a hoarder. They might have passed away recently. And I'm telling you, like, they had a garbage bin outside their house, and it was to the brim of old crap. And I mean, like, old crap. Mm-hmm. So I think I can understand this whole hoarding aspect of how much crap there would be. So you're saying that this fills the area of, like, their hangout spot?
Yes.
How the hell are you supposed to hang out or do philosophy when you get crap falling on top of you?
It's actually pretty funny how they do it, but I don't really want to spoil it that much. So Umi and Shun, they become a little bit closer, and she decides to help out with trying to spruce up the place, which is known as the Latin Quarter, and try to make sure that this building that the students care about so much is saved, and that hopefully they decide to build this new building elsewhere.
Yeah.
So the two of them, you know, they become closer and closer and become romantically involved. Well, one day, during a party for one of the other residents of Umi's household, it's like a going-away party, Umi shows Shun this picture of her father. And Shun becomes wide-eyed. And later on, he goes back to his house, opens up, like, a journal of sorts, and he has the exact same picture that Umi has.
Ah.
So there is the chance that Shun and Umi are brother and sister.
Ah.
So throughout the film, it's them trying to conflict. They really like each other, but because there is the possibility that they are related, they can't do squat.
Squat.
It's kind of like, you date a woman, and you find out she's, like, your third cousin.
Oh. Well, that's not too bad, because you can't go with the first cousin, but you could go with the second. So that's okay. As wrong as that is.
Yes. But this is a type of film that, like, it starts off a bit at the snail's pace, because you're trying to catch up with what these characters do on a daily basis. But once this Latin Quarter dilemma is brought into the plot, and this whole possible sibling relationship between the two main characters, the story becomes a lot livelier. The dialogue and actions of the characters start to rise on a more exciting humorous scale, and the bond between the two main protagonists has a stronger appeal. And what makes From Up on Poppy Hill a good film is because it has a strong message to back up its story. And that is that in order to embrace the future, you must always be reminded of the past. When I went to Japan years ago, I saw buildings new next to buildings that were like hundreds of years old.
Yes.
Case in point, when I went to the Nikko Shrines, and they have buildings there that have been around for almost 1,000 years.
Yeah.
So, throughout the film, the Japanese establishment appear more focused with looking pretty for the Olympics, while the youth of the country want to do everything they can to preserve the importance of past generations. You know, sometimes these cries fall on deaf ears, while other times they get lucky. And while there's always that wonderful feeling regarding something new, having the ability to preserve something classic feels more rewarding and timeless. And that's sort of what these kids are trying to tell the higher establishment. From that sort of standpoint, it brings a sort of strong emotion out of these characters. Now, remember when I was talking about the film Wolf Children a couple weeks ago? And
how could I forget?
Talking about how they brought about a sort of human emotion that I've never really seen brought up in animation or even recently, even live action films.
Yeah.
What Miyazaki here, the younger Miyazaki has done here, he doesn't come exactly to what Mamoru Hosoda did with Wolf Children, but he comes pretty close. Mm-hmm. Like, there are some parts in this film that, okay, that's kind of a cartoonish sort of expression. It's a kind of a cartoonish emotion. But there are times when you're watching this, and you're watching Umi when she's with her conflicted feelings and the missing of her mother and father, and you look into her eyes and you see just how upset she is.
Yeah.
It looks real how they do it. But it doesn't get to the point with what Hosoda did with the previous film. But it's very, very, very close. And what helps too is they got a great cast of characters, or a great cast, to come and dub the film in English. You had a couple of smaller name people, Sarah Bolger and Yelchin, play Umi and Shun, the main characters. But then you have Jamie Lee Curtis come in as the mother, Gillian Anderson as a grandmother, Aubrey Plaza as one of the other people that lived under Umi's household. You even got Jeff Dunham in there.
What?
Yeah, Jeff Dunham plays a small role in this movie.
Dunham!
Yep. Basically, it sounded like Peanut with a Lisp, his character.
Dunham.com.
But the two people who came into this film who really stole it were Ron Howard, who played the philosophy student who was a riot every time he was on screen, and Beau Bridges. Beau Bridges.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Why?
Why? Why Beau Bridges?
Well, what he brought to the character, because he played the chairman of the school. He played the chairman. He was the one that... It was his final decision whether or not to knock down the building or not. And this was the person that they had to go to. And it's not like they could just walk up to the office. No, they had to go all the way from where they were living, all the way to Tokyo, which was like a 2-hour train ride, just to meet with him. And they couldn't meet with him right away. They basically waited until the offices were closed to finally actually sit down and talk to him. It showed how much determination and patience that these students had in order to do what they really wanted to get done. And what I liked about Beau Bridges was the warm presence and noble heart that he brought to the character just really, really brought out his performance. Mm. And I really don't want to go too much more into this film. Like, I kind of understand why Disney did not release this in films, because it doesn't have that sort of draw that the other films in the Studio Ghibli library would have with kids. Like, this is more... It's a PG film. Like, anyone can go and see it. But it's not going to draw the kids in because it doesn't have that sort of magical aspect of past films.
No, they want Shrek.
Yeah, they want Shrek. They want How to Train Your Dragon. They want...
They don't want Brave.
Yeah, they don't want Brave. But I feel like... I don't want to say that Goro Miyazaki has, like, wiped away the mistakes he made with Tales from Earthsea, but he did a really great job with this film.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not stepping out from behind his father's shadow, which, if you know Hayao Miyazaki's work, he's a huge fucking shadow. But he's kind of, like, leaning to the side, getting a chance at, you know, what his bright future could be.
Well, the question I have really for you is because that we've had that little downslope of anime and stuff like that, and you going to Anime Boston in the next couple weeks, do you feel that, you know, anime has come back a little bit more this time? Is this on the up and up now?
Or yes.
Is it still kind of like in a flat line? Like, is it, you know, what do you feel like?
You know what? After watching a few of the shows that have come out this past fall, past in 2012, and coming into 2013, with the films like Wolf Children, with film like From Up on Poppy Hill, and especially with cartoons like Pet Girl Sakura-so and Kotoro-san, I think Japan is really, really coming back when it comes to animation. Granted, it's not reaching up to the current standards that we see in America, like Adventure Time and Regular Show and Archer, but they're really working their way back up to the prime that they had in the late 90s going to the early 2000s. But the spring season is about to start. I don't know what to really expect, what I'll be able to recommend for shows. But altogether, I've been very happy with what a lot of these companies have been bringing up. Don't get me wrong, like, Studio Ghibli never bullshits when it comes to their animation. They will never do a film or a story that, oh, it's going to just appease this 1%. They want to just tell a fantastic story. And I feel like that's what a lot of these production companies are doing now. They're like saying, okay, I know a lot of people are getting sick and tired of us doing a show that has no plot at all and just lame-ass excuses of showing boobage and all that fun stuff, which...
I don't mind so much, but the only problem is it just kind of gets annoying when there's always that little fucking character that's annoying and it does stupid little things and it always causes more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah. Sometimes. But I've always had an issue when an anime will throw in fan service and say that, hey, this is funny, boobies! No, that's just wasting our time.
Yeah.
But I feel like this film From Up on Poppy Hill, it's a great film. It's not the best in Studio Ghibli's library. But it's far from the worst. It's a lot better than Secret World of Ariadne. And I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. I came into it with a bit of low expectations after Secret World of Ariadne. I came out of it glad that I did see it. And it's
leaving
more hope. It is a great film. It's playing limited run. I can give it a 4.4 out of 5.
Yeah. I was expecting like 3.8, but that's just me.
It's great. It definitely check your local listings. Definitely see it.
If you're in the Lynn Peabody, Salem, Gloucester, no, yeah. Hollywood Hits has it.
Hollywood, if you want to sit in the worst seats in the world.
But it's a great movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I hope that you people out there will listen and enjoy it as well.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What do you mean, you people? I'm sorry, I had to bust your balls. Every freaking time, somebody's always got me and it's like, what are these people thinking? And then I'd be like, what do you mean, these people? And they're like, oh, F you.
Exactly. But it's one of those things where you wish more people in America will go see it, despite the fact that it's not made in America.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I made this point when talking about Wolf Children. Like, don't just dismiss the film because it's not another Shrek. Go and see it and you will be immensely entertained. So, 4.4 out of 5 for From Up on Puppy Hill. Definitely go and see it.
Yay! All right, end it.
You want to end it?
Fork.
Fork in this podcast? Don't talk about Motocross Madness?
No, I don't think we should give it any time. What did you feel about the game?
Okay, so I liked the racing aspect of it, but I felt like when it came to exploration, when it came to trying to do the tricks, I got bored.
Thank you.
I got bored, all right?
I just feel that these motocross games, as much as Motocross Madness was before when it was on the PC, I faintly remember it. I really do. I seriously, this is like digging really deep in my brain.
Back in the days when Monster Truck Magnus was on the PC as well.
Exactly. That's one of those things where this was kind of those things together where it's like Motocross Madness and it meets, the Monster Truck Madness. I think they would actually sell them in a two-pack together.
Yeah.
I remember that. Mm-hmm. But it was just one of those things where this game was awesome back then because of the fact that, you were able to do the racing and stuff. But now then, stuff like Freestyle Motocross came along and all these other ones where you're able to actually do... flips and tricks in the air, and now they brought it back, but on the
and then you have games like Trials.
Yeah, Trials, but that's a totally different aspect. That's the side view. I don't know how to explain that one. That one's hard to explain. But this one, from what I was watching with the camera view, it's down below behind the character, which doesn't help me. If I have a little bit higher up, I'd rather be like playing like Jeremy McGrath's motocross game,
mm-hmm. where which it is has a great series.
It has an above you and a little bit back, and it has the right distance so you can actually see what the hell's coming up the road. Because the only other way to see it is from the actual point of view of the character. I don't know if there's really any other way to really change the character's point of view because of the fact that they want to show your character, your avatar. You can take your avatar from your Xbox and put it into the game. Whoop-de-friggin-doo. That's the only problem that I have with those things, is whenever those games with the avatar comes into play, I want to say at least 7 to 8 times out of 10, mm-hmm. they suck. They just god-awful suck.
I mean, there are some gems. There are some hidden gems, but for the most part...
Very little. Yeah. But I'm just saying that it sucks because of the fact that you're like, you're great, I'm playing with my character. Oh, crap. It's like if...
It's not like what Nintendo has done with their Mii characters. Most of the time when you're playing with your Mii characters, it's a great gaming experience. But Microsoft doesn't seem to realize how to do that properly.
No, I don't think a lot of Microsoft knows what to do properly, but I don't know how the hell they've been... I mean, I like the game system. It's easier to play right now than PlayStation. I feel that it's just a lot of other people are always playing the Xbox instead of PlayStation.
Yeah, I was actually having a discussion with that with a friend of mine. It's like,
point taken... Darkheart, who I let move into my house, legitimately took over my bomb shelter. He has a PlayStation 3. He has his own TV. He only plays his PlayStation 3 once in a great while. I kid you not. Once in a while, I'll walk into my house after I've done a hard day's work or whatever the hell it is, and all of a sudden I look over to my left. Nope, there's no Darkheart in that way. I wonder if he's in my bomb shelter. I just put my ear to the door. Yep, he's playing Xbox again. Yeah. I'm going to go upstairs.
And you hear weird noises coming from that room as well.
I think the other day, the prime time was down there, so, yeah. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Luna wouldn't like it. Oh, wait, she was there. Never mind.
Okay. So, yeah, good idea. Let's stick a fork into this podcast show. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find our website at www.b3crew.com for the recent news reviews. Wait, I just did that.
You just said that, jerkface. I thought I was reliving something. Don't do that again.
Broken record time. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardgay.com. I'm on Twitter at king_baby_duck and Blueonic is under Blueonic. And you can check out also our Tumblr from time to time at b3crew.tumblr.com. I know we really haven't done much with that yet. I'm still trying to find some cool random shit that we can do, that we can talk about, that doesn't involve embargo stuff.
Yeah. Green. we're also on facebook.com/BostonBasherBrigade. So if you go in there, you can actually contact us a lot faster that way. We are actually paying attention more to that than anything. That and email address. But yeah, we put up we put up five whole videos, and I'm working on setting up a couple more videos that, you know, that we were recorded from PAX East, because I have been having so much fun between medical issues and other stuff getting in my way. But yeah, for the most part, I'll hopefully have those up sooner than later. And
yeah,
God damn it, watch them and spread them around, you motherfuckers.
Yep. So next week there won't be a regular show because we are working on something. We are getting ready to do our first in a very long time live video webcast.
Yay.
So next,
that's actually proper.
Yes.
It's not going to be
us
sitting at a table that
crunched together
at the King's house with my shitty little web camera that's not HD, doing it the old-fashioned way.
Mm-hmm.
So more or less, this is going to be done by the great John C. Reilly. Not that John C. Reilly.
Yep.
This other John C. Reilly that we know, that's an awesome man,
mm-hmm,
of The Late Show. You have to check out his show, The Late Show.
The Later Show.
Yes, The Later Show.
Who's, you know, I know The Later Show isn't technically under Electric Sisterhood, but he's friends with Issues Program, he's friends with us, but we like to support him. And his Jace Down studio. So we're going to do some dress rehearsal stuff, we're going to try to do some we'll do even some pre-recorded stuff that we can show during the live webcast, so we can take, you know, a bit of a five, do some rearranging and
shit. That's in between, yeah.
Yeah. So, you'll never know. Hopefully, when you hear from us next time, you'll be able to tune in live, chime in, and
it'll be on the 27th.
Yep.
Saturday. Don't forget it, kiddies.
Yep.
What time would we rather do this at?
Probably sometime in the afternoon. Maybe.
Two-ish.
Three-ish. We might have a guest on the show with us. We might have a musical guest with us, specifically.
Yes, exactly. So,
It's going to be fun. Hopefully it'll be fun. And we're going to test out some things next week to see if it all works. You might see it. You might not see it. And our good buddy Blonick here also will be taking a police exam. So please send him some mental love his way.
God, I hope I don't get another 93 on the test. I want 100. I want 100 this time.
Uh-huh.
I swear, if I'm going back down, if I'm going down, I just give up. All right.
So, so until next time, this is King BB Nut.
Live on it.
Reminding you, you do not have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps. You are listening to the sound of my voice. You are getting sleepy.
You're going to listen to this podcast for the rest of your life. I mean, all of our podcasts for the rest of your life.